You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. So the question investors are asking themselves all over the world this morning is, of course, is this a bottom or is it the bottom of a financial meltdown that has erased $8.3 trillion of value from markets around the world in about 13 months. Joining us now to talk about what looks like a bottom, because markets are actually selling upward or buying both on commodities and on stocks around the world. Join us to talk about whether this is a bottom or the bottom is Justin Urquhart-Stewart, who's an analyst with Seven Investment Management. He joins us from London. Also, our friend and contributor, Lisa Marganelli, who was a fellow at the New America Foundation, author of Oil on the Brain. Lisa joins us from Oakland, California. Good morning to you both. So, Justin, let me begin with you. The really huge sell-off yesterday on Wall Street had everyone thinking that this is the capitulation that spells a turnaround and that now maybe there's a slow build back from here on out. Any sign that this is the bottom, or is it just a bottom?
I'm afraid there's no real sign to say that it's the bottom. It may well be one. I'm expecting over the next few months to see some quite significant rallies that you'd get in a bear market, and this may be the start of one, because there is some vague good news out there despite all the bad news, and we're becoming sort of almost shell-shocked with the bad news. And the good news is, I suppose, that action is being taken, not just in the United States, but around the world, not in such a coordinated manner as necessarily one would like, but it's beginning to occur. And that's the sort of movement that one wants to see. But, of course, that's only just the start. To really actually start seeing a proper recovery coming through, you're going to have to see some vital signs in the economy, particularly the American economy, and particularly around probably around house values.
Justin, I was reading this morning that it appears, if you look at the numbers, that the S&P 500, which is probably the best bellwether of stock values in the U.S. economy, has erased all of the value from a series of bull markets that began in 1992. Are there real consequences to that for investors? I mean, do some people never return to the market? Or is it simply a matter of, okay, we start over again and just ride it up to the top in another 10 years?
I think there's a very serious issue about people's confidence. To add that as well, you can go back 28 years in Japan to actually go back to the value of the Japanese market is now. So that old mantra, in the long term, equity markets will perform. Well, in the long term, it seems as though equity markets end up exactly where they started. What it does do, though, is I think probably teach people that investing overall is not just about the stock market. It's about a range of different asset classes and a range of different geographical areas as well, because we're living through a particularly momentous time at the moment, as underlined by the G20 meeting last week, which I know came out with warm words and platitudes which achieve little, but the most important part of that was it took place at all. You've now got the people with the reserves, those people with the surpluses, talking to those people, unfortunately, who've actually got the deficits, and we need the circulation of those to come back, and that's not going to happen anytime soon until they can have some confidence that there's something worth investing in, and they're not being asked to just put their money into, well, Bear Stearns or Lehman's or Barclays,
right,
or something like that, where you either lose half your money, all of it.
Well, it's an interesting side story. A Saudi sheikh yesterday tried to buy 1% of Citigroup when it was selling at about $5 a share and wasn't able to move the price at all. And it appears, Lisa Marganelli, that whatever's going on in the Middle East, including piracy at sea off the Horn of Africa, isn't doing anything to raise oil prices, even though there's a bit of a buying going on today.
No, it's kind of funny because either the shut off that's happening in Nigeria or the capturing of this that tanker has 2 million barrels on it. Either of those would have sent the price up just 5 months ago. I mean, we would have been like, "Oh my God, where's it going?" And now, of course, it's not going anywhere. Deutsche Bank analysts are apparently having arguments about whether or not oil is going to $40 or $30 within the company.
And obviously a drop sounds good for consumers, Lisa, but not necessarily good for world markets. You want to explain that?
Well, a drop in the middle of a recession, depression is not a good thing. We might feel okay when we're going to get some gas, but in the long term, it's pretty bad for us, because what it means is that the oil-producing countries, who are mostly the balance of power now lies with the OPEC countries, or the balance of the oil lies with them, and they're not putting money into drilling holes in the ground. So what it means is that, you know, things are, as long as demand remains quite low as it is, prices will remain low, or they might bop around a fair amount. But then as soon as things start to pick up, we're simply going to kind of run into a wall of not really having much oil available, new oil on the market available, because they simply won't drill during this downtime, and prices will shoot back up. So we actually need to stop thinking that our oil policy is all about price and start thinking towards the long term and figuring out what to do.
And then speaking about the long term, on some level, are Americans getting the message about oil or about energy issues and how important it is to change the way they behave? Because the Energy Department is estimating the steepest drop in demand since 1980 in the next year.
I know. Isn't that amazing? And when we did it at that time, we did it because we got really efficient cars and because also people just stopped driving. Yeah, we are. It's a huge drop in demand, and it's changing everyone's habits. And then the drop in demand is happening all over the world. I read something that I guess in China, only 55% of the toys are being made that were being made last year, just because they're perceiving the slowdown, which means that their stores or their factories aren't using diesel, and so you just have this sort of slowdown going on all over the place.
Well, Lisa, I mean, is it the case that demand is actually shrinking worldwide, or is the growth starting to halt? Because, I mean, while the demand is shrinking in the United States, there is still India. There is still an enormous kind of emerging market that is making up for the slack in the industrialized world.
Yeah, well, the demand has already shrunk in the United States. You know, the drop is pretty huge. I think that what's happening is that the other countries around the world are also pulling back pretty rapidly. For a long time, the big puzzle about oil was, you know, why are we continuing to use so much when the price is so high? When the price is over $100 a barrel, why were people continuing to use? And the thing was is that for most of the world, we weren't thinking about whether or not we could afford the oil. We were thinking about how much we needed it because GDP was growing so fast, and so oil was really tied to GDP. So now that you see GDP really pulling back, I think you're going to see the demand for oil drop pretty dramatically.
Well, Justin, then, is this an indicator of prolonged recession and even something, on the order of, like, stagflation, where you have deflationary pressures at the same time that, there are all sorts of dislocations in the credit market that spike interest rates up?
Well, I think it's a combination of issues, but certainly here, yes, you are looking at recession, but in different areas around the world in different ways. So certainly you're seeing recession in the United States. We're seeing quite a deep recession, I suspect, in the United Kingdom lasting about a year or so, and a recession in the Eurozone, probably a slightly milder version there, apart from one or two countries which are looking particularly weak, such as Spain and Ireland. Japan also in recession. But the good news, and I suppose particularly to put this in perspective with the 1930s, there are some very significant differences as well as some scary similarities. But one of the big differences, of course, in the 1930s, China as an economy wasn't functioning. It was at war with Japan, and so therefore Japan wasn't functioning either because it was also involved in that. And, of course, India as well was actually part then of the British Empire, and so what didn't have that same impact. Now we have those two nations particularly in a position where they're still going to grow, but at a slower level. So in terms of global growth, we're still growing, but within that it's going to be balanced out between those countries, the emerging nations, those stronger ones which are still growing, and opposed to US and UK particularly, which are going to have to go through this unpleasant cycle.
Let's go around the table then before we go. Justin, what do the numbers look like? It looks like a buying opportunity this morning. Is that what you're seeing?
It is people looking to buy, but I suspect there's still very little willingness to actually commit too much at the moment. If there's a rally, most of London wants to sell into the rally. There's no faith in it yet, probably until 2009.
All right. And Lisa Marganelli, prices are hovering around 50 right now. Do you see this as a buying opportunity for traders this morning?
I have no idea. You're just going to have to go feel out and see how the market goes today.
That's what we'll do. We'll go feel out the market. That's our job. Yes. Justin Urquhart, Stewart Analyst with Seven Investment Management in London. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you.
And Lisa Marganelli, a fellow at the New America Foundation, author of the book Oil on the Brain. You do have oil on the brain, right, Lisa?
I do.
Yes. Yeah, so,
almost always.
Right. Thank you for joining us from Oakland, California.
Thank you.
So, you know, this is a bottom. This is not the bottom.
Well, that's two opinions. And as you know, if you ask a dozen people, you'll get a dozen different perspectives of what's happening in this unprecedented market.
Well, they say you never know the bottom until 6 months afterwards, because then you look back and you go, oh, that was the bottom.
That was the bottom.
Right, exactly.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.